much over here.
Okay. There are a few other smaller topics within the Chazavel, if you want to just touch on a little bit. First one is the idea of a Sudas Havra. So the Gemara tells us in like Katan, Sukkim, that on the first day of Avelus, so the Avelim are not permitted to eat from their own food. Somebody else has to provide them some food. So we call, of course, the Sudas Havra. The Gemara uses the Lashon that on Yom Rishon, there's an Issa to eat from his own food. So the Rishonim had a machlokes, what does Yom Rishon mean? Some Rishonim said it means the entire day. Some Rishonim said it means only the first meal. We paskin that really the cool is the both. We paskin that it only applies to the first meal, and it only applies on the first day. So let's say if I would take a kvura was at 10 o'clock in the morning, so when they come home for lunch, that's the issur of that's the requirement for the savra that relative that neighbors or somebody else has to bring them the food. But let's say when it comes time to eating supper at 6 o'clock, even if it's still the same day, one would not be required to eat somebody else's food. And similarly, possibly, let's say the kavur was late in the afternoon at 4 o'clock, and now by the time they get home, it's after dark already. So even though it's the first meal after the kavura, but since it's not the Yom Rishon, not the same day, it's maybe the second day of Avelus, then there would be no requirement to Sudas Havra. We pass in Shulchan Aruch, that's really the only time there's a requirement to Sudas Havra, is only if it's both the first day as well as the first meal. So what exactly does it mean that the Sudas Havra is provided by somebody else? So it means it has to be brought by somebody who's not the immediate member of your household. Let's say the husband's sitting Shivas, the wife can't bring a Sudas Havra. The wife, the husband, it's the same stuff. Well, let's say the parents sitting Shivas, so one of the children who lives in the house, some of Chashuk and Ovid, can't bring them the food. It's all the same food, so it should be brought really by somebody who's on the outside. What is the Sudas Havra supposed to consist of? So we mentioned this earlier today, that the Rashbam writes that the Sudas Havra is supposed to have Yayin, because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, so nitna yayin el anachim bois aveilim, that use yayin a little bit, not to get drunk, but to calm the person down a little bit. Let's say boser also should really be a real suda. So our minigas, we don't have boser. Our minigas we have, like Rashi quotes from Chumash, Rashi quotes from Pashas Toldos, that you have a round thing, so bagels and eggs and things like that. It's both the galgal achaz of oilam for different reasons. Those are all minhagim. But in terms of the real din, so the real list or the real requirement of the Sudas Havra is that it should be somebody else's food, not the avos food himself. Is the Sudas Havra really like a mitzvah in the sense of, let's say, the avos doesn't want it, doesn't need to be bothered, it's 5 minutes before shkia, do me a favor, I'm not hungry now, I'll eat it an hour from now, and I'll eat my own food. So Pashup Shad is that there's no requirement, it's not a chiyuv, it's not a mitzvah to eat a Sudas Havra. If you want to eat, so then somebody should bring it to you. That's why the post can have a whole discussion about, let's say, a common shiloh. If you have a Sudas Havra late in the afternoon on Friday, you have a Leviah in the afternoon at 2 o'clock on Friday, you come back 4 o'clock, Shabbos is in an hour. So we try to avoid having Sudas on Friday afternoon. You can impinge upon covered Shabbos. So if you hold that it's mamash a Sudas mitzvah, chik v'yav, you have to have it, okay. But if it's probably not such a Sudas mitzvah, so then one should perhaps forego it on Shabbos rather than interfering with the covered Shabbos. The notion, the Sudas Havra that we speak about, of course, this is reminiscent for us, the idea of the Sudas Masechet, that the Gemara tells us in Masechet Tainis, that an Erev Tishvav in the afternoon, so the last meal that a person eats before the Tainis begins, the Gemara doesn't use the phrase, not like the Sudas Havra exactly, but also the Gemara speaks about being a special meal, in the sense of that it's not supposed to be a fancy meal, that it's not supposed to have Shnei Tavshilin, it's just supposed to be a pas with one tavshil and water, and that's it, and with ashes, and the whole thing. So the Gemara uses the phrase, that's supposed to eat it like Misha makes a mutu lafonav. So again, it's not the exact same Sudas Havra, but that idea that it's a very somber type of meal, of course we didn't have yesterday, and Shabbos you don't have it, but that has certain reminiscence, at least in terms of the menu, where we have bread and eggs, so that clearly is very reminiscent of what the Sudas Havra is all about. There are a whole series of different halacha/minhagim that one should be aware of in terms of avelus, particularly as they relate to davening, to tefillah. So an Avil, because he's mechuyif to daven, when he's known he doesn't daven, but when he's an Avil, he's mechuyif to daven. And there is an inya that the Avil davens for the Yomah. Not everyone even agrees to this, or someone has the minug during Shiva the Avil davka didn't daven for the Yomah, but whatever the Maisam minug is, that it's considered to be a zchus for the neshama, for the Avil to daven for the Yomah. And then the whole idea of the Avil saying Kaddish, you know, the saying of the Kaddish doesn't appear in the Gemara itself, but it has its sources in Amari Chazal, Zoya, and other places in Chazal, the Drashim, about the significance of the Avil saying Kaddish as a zchus for the neshama of the person who was niftar. The original meaning of Kaddish was clearly for a parent, and you have different minhagim about whether it's appropriate sometimes to say Kaddish for other relatives, if the other relative didn't have a child to say Kaddish from, etc. Within the saying of Kaddish, so there were two fundamentally different minhagim in Klai Yisrael about saying Kaddish. So there was one was the old minhag Ashkenaz, was that only one person in shul would say Kaddish. The one person in shul, one Yasser would say Kaddish, and he would be, and to his Kaddish everybody would answer. And then you had other minhagim and other communities there. You had everybody said all the avails said Kaddish together. So many, many Ashkenazi communities, probably at this point in time, most Ashkenazi communities have adopted the Sephardi minhag for a very simple reason. That the Rama writes a whole hierarchy in terms of the Kadeshim, that you have a problem. If you have one Avil and Shul, that's great. If you have more than one Avil, then the only X amount of Kadeshim that you have. So you have stuff finding it out. So who gets Kadim and Kaddish? So this guy, he's a Shleishim, and he's a Yibbeis Chedish, and he's a Yerzayt, and he's a member of the Shul. He pays his dues, he hasn't paid his dues. He's related. You have a lot of issues. So the Rama writes, tries to give you some kind of set of a hierarchy of Klolim as to who should do what. And in the end, the Rama says each place should follow their own minhag. You should try to avoid fights. The biggest thing is to avoid fights. So some of the poskim in Europe realize that it's very nice for the Rama to tell us to avoid fights. Tachlis, people are still fighting. So they changed the minhag. They said, you know what, the only way to stop all this fighting over the Kadeshim is just everybody says Kaddish together and finished. So unfortunately, what happened is now all the fights just left the Kadeshim to the Daven for the Yomid. So you have to be careful that a person, Rechmanos Lan, is an Ovel. So the biggest chus for the Neshama of the Nifter is not to fight over a Kaddish, not to fight over Daven for the Yomid. It's better to give up the Yomid to somebody else than to make a whole scene about fighting, about davening for the Yomid. Daven for the Yomid is supposed to be a chus for the Nifter, not Chalil, let you turn into a Kitrug for the Nifter. There are other things that are minhagim that are relevant in terms of tefillah, particularly in the Beis Avel. So there are certain things that we leave out in the Beis Avel. We leave out the tachanun in the Beis Avel, because the midas hadin is sholeik, so we don't want to speak about not in yadam of tachanun. We don't say halal in the Beis Avel. This is the whole shayla. I have to have a case of halal, so yom tov you're not going to have. We can have a shchedesh, a chanukah, so you don't really want to say halal in the Beis Avel. It becomes a whole shayla. What do you do afterwards? So when everybody goes home, what should they do? So chanukah, well, you have to say halal to din, so you have to say halal later. Whereas a shchedesh is not really a din anyway, so there's somewhere at the minute that they don't, that they missed it in the Beis Avel, so it's over, finishing up to say halal. That was chanukah, a different minhagim. There are some places that send the Avel out. The question is that really appropriate? Because it could be that the idea of not saying Chal in the Beis Avel is the same as we said before, the Rav not saying Tamatur in the Beis Avel. The Beis Avel is a surah to it. It's not a happy place. The Beis Avel is a place where the Midas Adin is Shailet. It's not a place for singing songs. So it's not a place for Tamatur. So just because you're going to send the Avel out for 5 minutes into the other room, so that's not Mafkiah, the Shem Beis Avel. So there are different minhagim about that. But again, I think the universal meaning is that at least when the Avil's there, so we don't say halal. Whether you say it when you come back or not, it's a different story. Chanukah, of course, you would be required to say it when you get back. There are different minhagim about different things in the tefillah that should or should not be changed in the Beis Avil. Some of the things I'm sure you've seen people screaming out about Kaddish Tiskabel. Should you say Kaddish Tiskabel in the Beis Avil? Not say Kaddish Tiskabel in the Beis Avil. So a lot of that is a throwback from Tisha B'Av, because Tisha B'Av, we don't say Kaddish Tiskabel for at least for part of the day, the nighttime, and after we read Eicha, we don't say it, and we don't say it in the morning, because Sosam Tfilasi, because the Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't, you know, in a certain sense, doesn't listen to that Tfilas after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So should that carry over to Zman of Avelus also? So there are different minhagim about that. The different minhagim about saying Birchas, should you say Birchas Kodim in a Beis Avel? Should you say it for us? Should you say Elokeinu Elokeinu Hasenu? Again, there are different minhagim. It's hard for me to say, you know, Chlor, which way to do. So there's a minhag kavua in town, so one should try to follow whatever that minhag is. There are other things that an Avel doesn't say because they're in Yadam of related to Simcha. Like the post can say when you say Abdullah, but an oval has to make Abdullah, an Onin doesn't make Abdullah, an oval makes Abdullah. So but he shouldn't say Hina Kel Shuasi. That those psukim, shaftim, ayim, sasim, imayne, shua, Hashem, all those psukim, zvali, besimcha, that's not appropriate for a novel per se. And the psukim talk about, should a novel say Kiddush Levana? So Kiddush Levana is also a type of a mitzvah that was supposed to say in the state of simcha. That's the fact when many say hey, that you should wait till it changes your shoes tonight for Kiddush Levana, and some will follow that. So part of the reason why we don't say Kiddush Levana before Tisha B'Av is because it's a mitzvah that you say when you're in the state of Simcha. So an Ava really shouldn't be saying Kiddush Levana either. The only problem is that by not saying, he may miss the whole Kiddush Levana. So that's what the Poskim say, that if he'll be able to chop it afterwards, he should wait till the Shiva is over. He's going to miss it. So it probably is really mechuyev in it, so he should probably be saying it. But if he's able to avoid it, so it's probably better to avoid it, to say it till later. Then we mentioned before about Brichas Kohanim, the whole shaila about whether the Ovel should be duchening. So, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, of course, this is a daily shaila. So, in Chutz Laaretz, with a Yom Tifta oriented shaila, is an Ovel duchen. So, the many have the custom that an Ovel for the whole Yud Beis Chodesh doesn't duchen. The only thing is, if that's true, you should make sure to leave before they get to say. So, it shouldn't be a shaila of being sure when everyone else is duchening. But again, a lot of these things, in terms of these quasi simchas and things that we don't say in davening, and things that we delete to the Ovel, so a lot of these things are taller than minik, so when there's a kavua minik, so one should try to follow that. There's another aspect which is also related a little bit to Chas HaVeilus, and that's the idea of a Yurtzeit. So the idea of a Yurtzeit already has its mocher in Chazal. Chazal speak about Yom Shemeis Te'Aviv, Yom Shemeis Te'Rabbi. So the Gemara speaks about a person abstaining from meat and wine in those days. So there are different minhagim about Yurtzeit. There are some who follow the practice of fasting on the Yurtzeit, others who make kiddushim on the Yurtzeit. Again, these are above and beyond the scope right now as to the different takes in Yurtzeit. But the observance of the Yurtzeit in some shape or form, that's pretty much a universal minhag. There are certain details in terms of what the proper observance of the Yurtzeit is really supposed to entail. There are more quotes in minhag that on the Yurtzeit, a person shouldn't really go to a Beis HaSimcha. A person should be, like he is during Yud Beis Chodesh, they should be on the Yurtzeit of a parent also. So there are many who follow this. Others who Lavush quotes, he says, he's never heard of this minhag, but the later folks can do quote it. Ramon, the Shach, quote this minhag, that a person should observe on a Yurtzeit the same way they would observe on a during Yud Beis Chodesh, a quasi type of Avelus. There are cheshbonos in terms of how do you figure out the Yurtzeit exactly. Which day does the Yurtzeit correspond to? So does the Yurtzeit correspond to the Yom HaMisa? Does the Yurtzeit correspond to the Yom HaKfura? So we paskin that it corresponds to the Yom HaMisa. You always observe the Yom HaMisa for the Yurtzeit. Only possible exception is the first year. Now, the first year, so many have a custom of observing the Yom HaKfura. My high, what comes in the first year of subsequent years, was based on a very simple possible mistake that we're going to make. That the Avelus of Yud Beis Chodesh so doesn't end, technically speaking, with Yurtzeit. It really ends from Yud Beis Chodesh Miyom Miyom, from the day of the Kvura. Kvura starts out with the Hilchos Avelus. Let's say if a person was Nikvar on Dalet Shvat, so Gimel Shvat is the last day of the Yud Beis Chodesh. You can have a situation where a person will die one day and they won't be buried for a couple of days. Common all the time, 2-3 days pass before the person is buried. So you can have a funny thing. You count the Yurtzeit from the Yom HaMisa, so psychologically people think after the first Yurtzeit is all over, the Avelus is over. So what will happen is that if a person died on Beis Shvat and they weren't Nikvar until Zayin Shvat, they got stuck for 5 days, so people are going to think. People are going to think that if you observe the Yurtzeit on Beis Shvat and the Yom HaMisa, which is really the Yurtzeit, which subsequent years you're going to observe the Yurtzeit on Beis Shvat, so people are going to goop and they're going to think, oh, Beis Shvat is all over, I'm allowed to go to the parties now, I'm allowed to do whatever I want now, which is really not the case. So therefore, many Acharonim instituted a minhag to change the first Yurtzeit. The first Yurtzeit, again, the whole Yurtzeit is not Halacha Moshe Messina, it's not written in stone. So the minhag was in many communities for the first Yurtzeit to push it off to the Yom HaKvura, lest it lead to any confusion. Many folks can say, that's only true if there was really a break between the two. But if there was no break, it was almost the next day. So then Mehecha takes it that there's not going to be any confusion. There are different minhagim about this. Usually what that minhag is that if that we observe the first Yurtzeit on the Yom HaKfura, if there was a break, a little bit of a break between the two. The only exception to this is when you have a Shana Muveres. If you have a Shana Muberes, then there's no need to follow this minute. Why? Because Yud Beis Chodesh ends after 12 months are up. Whereas, let's say a person dies on, in the Chodesh Tishrei, so the following year, Yurtzai, even if you keep the Yom HaMisa in Tishrei, it's already 13 months. So you don't have to keep the dinner of Yud Beis Chodesh until the first year. As soon as the 12 months are up, it's over. So the whole reason that minute doesn't apply when you have a Shana Muberes. So again, these are all different minhagim in terms of being kaved yirtzai. The basic minhag is that putting aside the first year, as all subsequent years, the yirtzai is observed on the yom hamisa, not on the yom hakvura. It's in the context of yirtzai. So the post can have the whole discussion about the two others, about a person dies and one other, which yirtzai you keep. So basically, as we all know, there are two different opinions. So the Ramah seems to say that the Gavi Yurtzai, the Ika other is the first other, and the other say the Ika other is the second other, and many other practices of observing both days of Yurtzai. Again, the whole Yurtzai itself is not Halacha Mashma Sinai, so there are different practices, different minhagim about this. There is another area of halacha I want to talk about in terms of, it's not hilchos avelus proper, but it appears in hilchos avelus, and it's definitely relevant in terms of things we're talking about, and those are the dinim of kriya, about the mitzvah of tearing kriya. There is a machlekes in the Rishonim whether the tearing kriya is really a dinim in HaTorah or not, because the parasha b'nei Aaron, so it says that the sons of Aaron were told, after the brothers died, and Aaron after the sons died, so he said, "Bigdechem lo sifromu, don't rip your clothes." So the Gemara says, "You see from here that an avul is mechuyev to rip his clothes. The mitzvah is kriya." So some Rishonim say it's a mitzvah deraisa, mechuyev deraisa to tear kriya for a relative, and other Rishonim held that it's only midrabanan. Most of the Rishonim held that it's generally speaking only midrabanan. Who is a person required? Who is required to tear kriya? So the Gemara in my katan has a long list of different scenarios in which a person is required to tear kriya. The Gemara says that person is for sure required to tear kriya for an immediate relative. That's no question. For a relative who is mechuyav in the Bible, for sure is mechuyav to tear kriya. But even not for such a relative, even for a regular person, you can sometimes be mechuyav to tear kriya. So the Gemara says, if you're omid b'shas tzias neshama, if you're present when a person dies, then you're mechuyav to tear kriya. Then the Gemara says, and what if you're not present when the person dies, but you heard that the person died, and the person was an ish kosher, was it? Good person, is a shemitah mitzvah. So the Gemara says you're really supposed to take kriya for him also. And the Gemara says that the person is your rebbe, then for sure you have mechuyav to take kriya. The Talmud Chacham, a whole hierarchy of different people, we have mechuyav to take kriya. At the end of the day, if you take these Gemaras kipshutam, so you end up mamash having to take kriya for all the time. So different Rishonim have different opinions about this. Some Rishonim say that some of these are not real chiyuvim. That if you want to, you're allowed to, it's not about tashchis, you're not really mechuyav. At the end of the day, what ends up happening is that amminig is that we really only take kriya for immediate relatives. So the relatives you mechuyav himself for, whole person has a Rebbe Muvok, so then the minig is if you really would have such a person as man is there, so people take kriya for that. It's a big shayla about a omid b'shas t'tias neshama, so technically speaking, a person who's omid b'shas t'tias neshama is really supposed to take kriya. Many people don't, and many poskim, try to defend the minhag that people don't tear kriya b'shas t'tias neshama. They're afraid that if we're going to tell everyone to tear kriya, people aren't going to want to be there b'shas t'tias neshama, and that's a big aveira. That if a person's mamash dying, so you're not supposed to leave them. The person should try to make sure a person doesn't die alone. So if everyone's going to get nervous, oh no, I'm wearing my good shirt. And so if you tell them that, you have to tear kriya, so it's going to leave the day mishal, everyone's going to walk out and never leave the person alone. So it's like a Hashem, they give you a sakula. The shayla exactly why the minhag is to be, many people have the minhag to be makel about this. The shayla whether it's really appropriate or not. But a core part of the real din of kriya that we have for sure, bizman of that, is the chi of kriya for relatives. The Gemara says that the chi of kriya is not really the same as the chi of avelus. The Gemara has the phrase that chi of avelus l'chud, the chi of kriya l'chud. You don't even say Allah k'divrei make up the oval by kriya. That's what led some Rishonim to say that deraisa, even those Rishonim say it's not deraisa, it's different, it's not exactly the same as avelus. But there are certain correlations. It means you tear kriya for the people who you've been misaf for. Where exactly does a person tear kriya? What kind of a beged is a person required to tear kriya for? So the Gemara says that there's a difference between a parent versus other relatives. That for a other relative, so a person is only mechuyav to tear one beged, Whereas for pair, the person is mechuyev achigalas liba. The person is mechuyev to tear all the begadim until literally until his pshutuk mashmal, until his heart is revealed, until his mamsh gets down to his skin. So even though that's what the Gemara says, that's not exactly always true, because the Gemara says that there is some begadim that you're not mechuyev to tear. Even for a pair, you're not mechuyev to tear. The Gemara speaks about parkatuso, that a special type of a beggar that you're not mechuyev to tear. So why is that? So somebody showed him say it's like an undergarment, like an undershirt. It's not a real beggar. It's just wearing to absorb sweat. So that's not a beggar choshev. That doesn't require kriya. Other Rishonim have the exact opposite shot. They say that's not an undergarment. It's like a coat. Something that you're wearing on top of all your clothing. So that's not really a beggar. Lamaisa and Shechonach, we pass both are true. We pass that you don't tear a kriya on the undershirt, and you don't tear kriya on the outer coat also. So there's a big shot on the foskim, shach and taz, and all machlekes. What if the story of a jacket? We call today it's a suit jacket, a davin jacket. What's the halacha? Would one tear kriya on a jacket or not? So for other relatives, it's not really relevant. For other relatives, so you only tear one beged anyway. So for other relatives, you just tear a shirt and finish. And there's no need to tear a jacket. Not only is there no need, you shouldn't. You're not supposed to tear more than necessary. It's shalom al tashchit. But for a parent, where the halacha requires to tear all the begadim, so the question is, are our jackets the equivalent of a parkasusa? They're like the beged achitza that the Rishonim were describing. That seems to be a big machlokes. So the Taz says that the definition of a beged achitzon. So basically, the Taz says whatever a person wears in your house, if you'd walk around with it in your house, that's the beged that's chayav in kriya. If it's a beged that you wouldn't necessarily wear in your house, so that's not chayav in kriya. So a jacket. Most people in America don't walk around with jackets in the house. So that would be a beged achitzon. The problem is that the Shach says that even begadim that you would wear in the street, that's also considered to be a beggar that's chayav in kriya. The only kind of beggar that you don't tear kriya on is, he says, a beggar amuchad tefillah, like if you have a special davening jacket, special kapot or something, you know, only put on for davening, so that wouldn't be chayav in kriya. But a jacket, even if you only wear it in the street, that would be chayav in kriya. So the Shach writes, and especially if it's kind of a jacket that you would never ever be caught dead in the street without wearing it, that's mamash a beggar choshev. So you have to tear kriya on it. So Lamaisi, even according to the Shach, our jacket's probably not like that. Very few people, maybe some Hashivas, but very few other people would never be caught without a jacket in the street. In the summertime, 100 degrees, they wouldn't walk outside without a jacket. They would. So our jackets are probably putter from kriya, bein lefi Shach, bein lefi Taz. So that's what we should tell people in the file. I think the correct thing to do is like this. That if it's a regular relative, then don't get involved in the shiloh. Why should you think of tearing a jacket, tear a shirt, which is b'shua chayav in kriya? And for kid, if you're going to tear the jacket instead of the shirt, you find that you have to take kriya and you have to tear over again. So don't tell somebody to tear the jacket. If it's a parent, so me'ikra, then they fulfill the kriya with the shirt. The SSA, some people like to tear the jacket. Many people have a meaning of tearing the jacket. When it comes to tearing for a parent, so the post can point out, it's not really about tashkin. Only the Gemara says it's about tashkin to tear unnecessary begadim, but that's not if it's the covet of v'imo. If it's extra, special covet of v'imo, so that's not called about tashkin. So therefore the post can say that if you want to tear a jacket, you're allowed to tear a jacket for a parent, in addition to a shirt. It shouldn't be the only beggar that you're tearing. Just to tear the jacket, not for the shirt, you're not really yaitze, but if you want to tear a jacket, yes, so that's okay for a parent. But for a regular relative, so that's a serious bashal about tashkin, and you're probably not gaining anything anyway. Somebody have a question? Yeah. You know what? Yeah, so the Netziv writes that you don't do kriya in the Netziv. Beggar shel mitzvah, you don't do kriya. So even though the Gemara says that shegalas libo, turns out that there's very few begadim that you're really tearing for a parent. Because if a jacket on the ikra din is not really chayav, and tzitzit you don't tear, and undershirt you don't tear, so the only beggar you're wearing is a shirt. So be it. So women tear is as follows. Women are also mechuyev to tear, but the Gemara says that a woman could tear and then like fix it up. So what she does is they take a safety pin and she tears in the corner somewhere, don't see, and immediately she says she pins it up. So that's okay. But if a man shouldn't do that, a woman is allowed to do that. But yeah, you're going to say, yeah, you have to tear a certain, amount. So how much?
What about your wife? What categories does she fall under?
A wife is like a regular relative.
Yeah.
Based on this idea that the Gemara says that for a regular relative you tear, you don't have to tear a shigalas libo, so the Gemara says also in terms of the size of the kriya, that for a regular relative, so you just have to tear a tefa, that's the bare minimum. Of the emo, you have to get to the point about shigalas libo, so since the Gemara always uses the phrase that shigalas libo all the time, it's something about a parent, so the early Echronim have a minhag, kind of prevalent minhag, is that you tear on different sides for parents than you do for a regular relative. Regular relative, you tear on the right side, and for a parent, you tear on the left side because the heart tips a little. It's machlan avinu on the left side. The meaning is that you tear of the emo on the left side. That's not the ikar din. If you ask most people what are the differences between kriya of the emo and shakrobim, they would tell you this difference. This is the minig, which is the extension of what the Gemara says, Ashiagalas Libo. But the fact that there are different criteria in terms of the emo versus other parents, versus other relatives, that's for sure true. Well, let's say an emotional person changes a baggage in the middle of Shiva. So for a regular relative, you don't have to tear it. Because a regular relative, you don't have a chuv to wear the kriya. You have to do the maisa kriya and finish. So you only tear one baggage and finish. But for other emo, so you have to be karea everything. So even if you switch begadim in the middle of Shiva, you would have to tear them as well. Where in the beged exactly is the kriya supposed to take place? So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch in terms of the right position. Basically, the Ramah paskins that anywhere in front of you is basically all right. And you shouldn't tear the kriya somewhere from the back, that mikra, somewhere all the way in the bottom, where you can't see it, so anywhere in front of you would be okay. There's a shiloh, whether it's supposed to be dafka with machum tzava, or it should be dafka, you know, on the top part of the baggage. There are Muslims to say that anything in the front is also acceptable. How is a person supposed to tear kriya? So the Gemara says there are differences here also between aviv imo versus shakrovim. That aviv imo, you have to be kareb yad. It has to be mamish, you know, real aggravation, you know, ripping your clothes, whereas the shakrovim, you could tear with a kli. So what we do is like this, that it's very, very hard to tear our clothing today. To try to tear it with your hands is mamish impossible. Everyone ever go to the coast and try to rip kriya without a scissors is mamish impossible. So what we do is, they start kriya a little bit with a kli, and then once you cut through the threads a little bit, then you try to do the rest of the kriya. You try to do a tefach with one hand. For other than there is a machlekes and then the poskim about who should be doing the kriya. Should the person himself be doing the kriya? Should somebody else be doing the kriya to him? So there's kvaras l'kan l'kan. Some poskim say that it's better for him to do it himself. Mitzvah b'yosu mishlucho. Others say it's better to have somebody else do it because that's like more aggravation if someone else is ripping your clothes. So we usually do like a little bit of a combination. Usually the rav is around, so he'll usually help them out a little bit. Usually he comes with a responsible rav will come with a scissors or a razor blade or something to a levaya. Even now the funeral director brings one also, so you don't even have to bring it. So they'll start off the kriya, and then the person themselves will usually finish up and try to do a tefach.
All of them is
going to be avol oren? No. All of them is wearing during Shiva. So if it's for shar krovim, then just one beged is enough. Out of the emo, then you have to. Of the email, you have to put each beggar that you're wearing during Shiva.
And why is it only for body? Why don't
there's a pants? Also, yeah, that's a good question. Why? Yeah, I don't know.
Is your wife or husband under Sharkovin?
Yeah, Sharkovin.
Did you
have to take? Oh, so that's the question. When exactly should you take kriya? So from the simple reading of the Gemara we mentioned before, my katan. You should really take kriya b'shas l'tzias neshama. So if you're standing next to your relative when they're passing away, you should take kriya mamash right then. So many have a custom not to tear then. The reason that's given is that since the dinim of kriya are a little bit complicated, we're afraid people may tear incorrectly. So we want there should be a rav, somebody who's knowledgeable, the dinim of kriya should be present. So therefore the minute we came to push it off until a little bit later. So when should it be? The different minhagim, some tear at the hespedim, and right before the hespedim, some tear at the beit hakvaros. It should be what the Gemara calls b'shas chimum. The person should still be, aggravated. Until kavura still for sure falls under that category. Even a person didn't even tear then. I'll shiver the tear of the email can tear even later than that. Yeah, because no one's around. Maybe no one's around to tell them how to do it right. Okay, maybe I don't know. So if he wants to switch his shirt, yeah. We should have mentioned when we learned about the dinim of kibbutz, about wearing freshly laundered things. The folks say that doesn't apply to big days. There, things get very sweaty, so you're allowed to switch your underwear during shiva. That's, even if it's freshly laundered underwear, that's a problem. So some folks can say shirts also get sweated up. The only thing is that if the ima wants to switch his shirt, he would have to take it over again. Right. The Gemara says that you should also do the kriya in such a way that it's nikra that you're doing it with Taurus kriya. It doesn't just look like the shirt just ripped. So there's a tshuva quote from the Chayyadim that the kriya is supposed to go down. It shouldn't go sideways. If it goes sideways, that doesn't look so much like a kriya. I'll tell you the truth. The man is there with that shirt. I don't know whether that's necessarily true, but that's what the minig is. The minig is to try to go, to make the kriya to go down. It's diagonal. It should go basically in a downward motion. It should look like a... That's what our minig is in terms of that. No, it should be, it shouldn't just be a split. It should be nikra. It should go, like, start with the scissors from here or something, or start with the razor from here. And
like a whole piece should be like, yeah. Like a
big, just make it in the middle, I think it should be. There is another din of kriya, which is irrelevant, unfortunately, still a nice, which is in Yom Kippur of Tisha B'Av. That's the din of kriya for the Makom HaMikdash. So the Gemara tells us that Chazal instituted a whole series of different kriyas for other tragic events, not just the death of an individual. If the Sefer Torah gets burnt, Goyim destroy Sefer Torah, you have to take a kriya. Or if there's a tremendous a defeat, a military defeat, you'd have to take a kriya. So who are the name? The Gemara says that a roa mikdash b'chavana, one would be required to take a kriya. So here the Gemara tells us that there were a whole series of different takanas acham in terms of tearing kriya for the makom hamikdash. That first Chazal instituted that if a person sees the Ari Yehuda b'chubanam, so one would be required to tear kriya. So then the Gemara says Ari Yehuda, a lot of different cities. So then after you saw the Ari Yehuda and then you see Yerushalayim b'chubanam, you have to tear kriya again. And then when you're in Yerushalayim and now you come to the base of Mikdash, you see the Mikdash b'chubanam, so you have to tear kriya a third time. So three distinct different chiyuvim of kriya. So the Gemara, in speaking about the chiyuvim of kriya, the Gemara uses the phrase that Ara Ari Yehuda b'chubanam. You see them in the state of destruction, so you have to tear a kriya. So Ara Yushalayim b'chubanam, Ara Mikdash b'chubanam. What does b'chubanam mean? So the Magen Avraham writes that what's the halacha if you have an ear which used to be for the Ari Yehuda, which has Baruch Hashem a nice Jewish community living there, but it happens to be under the Yishma'elim, he writes. It happens to be under the. And the Magen Avraham lived in 1600s, and the Turks, that was in charge of it all the time. So it happens to be that there's non-Jews who are in charge, but there is a nice Jewish community there that's thriving, that's flourishing. So the Magen Avraham writes, that's called Bechubana. It's not under Jewish control. It's here today, gone tomorrow. So he says, that's not called the Yeshuva, and that's called Bechubana. So the implication of that Magen Avraham is, what would the halacha be? And the reverse is true. What if you would have an area of the Ari Yehuda that's back under Jewish control, but there are a lot of goyim living there? So Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva, so that would not be b'chubanam. That's called the yeshuvam. Whether they're happy about the situation or not, that there are goyim living there, but lamaisa, if the Jews are in control, so the Rav Moshe assumes that's called the Ari Yehuda b'yeshuva, not b'chubanam. Based on this, Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva that after 1967, so he writes that when you see the Ari Yehuda b'zman hazeh, you're not mechuyav to tear kriya, because that's called the yeshuvam, even though there are goyim still living there. Then Rav Moshe has another chiddush. Rav Moshe says, what about Yerushalayim b'chubana? So Rav Moshe says that he thinks that the same criteria that the Magen Avraham used for the Ari Yehuda should be true for Yerushalayim also. And therefore, Rav Moshe writes, Yerushalayim is also not b'chubana b'zman hazeh. Then Rav Moshe says, but the distinguishing point is the Mikdash b'chubana. Says Rav Moshe, Ari Yehuda is a function of political control. Yerushalayim is also a function of political control, but the Beis HaMikdash, he says, has nothing to do with power. The Beis HaMikdash has to do with, is there a Beis HaMikdash there, or is there no Beis HaMikdash there? If there's a Beis HaMikdash there, then it's not Bechubana. If there's no Beis HaMikdash there, then it is Bechubana. So therefore, Rav Moshe Paskin, that Bezman HaZeh, one is still required to take Kriya on the Makom HaMikdash. You're not required to take Kriya for Ari Yehuda, and you're not required to take Kriya for the old city of Yerushalayim, but when you see the Makom HaMikdash, you are Mechuyav Mikra Din. Rav Moshe held this way, you have a chuyav to tear kriya as well. The Rav also held this way, that the definition of Yerushalayim b'chavana, so the definition of mikdash b'chavana, that means Beis HaMikdash. Without a mikdash, so it doesn't matter who's in control, doesn't matter what's happening, without a Beis HaMikdash, it's still called b'chavana. That's what the Rav. The Rav also had this idea when, after 1967, the Rav was very upset that a certain individual wanted to delete the Nachem from the davening of Tisha B'Av. So he felt that. How can you say, but here Abazuya, Vacharub, and Shamema, Vabuyoshe, it wasn't true. So the Rav said that it is true. He says that Kol Zman, there's no Beis HaMikdash, so even though Chas Pei Hashem, we have Yerushalayim back, well, there's no Beis HaMikdash, so it's still Ira Bezuya V'Chareva, that we can still ask the Rebbeinu Shalom to be Nachem, as Avei Litzin, and Avei Yerushalayim. That's the same, the Rav was saying the Gabi Nachem, Rav Moshe was saying the Gabi Kriya as well. So following this, the Mishnah Berurah writes, and the Mishnah Berurah preceded that, the Mishnah Berurah writes what's called Roa Es HaMachom HaMikdash. So the Mishnah Berurah says that either if you see the Kotel, that's called Roa HaMachom HaMikdash, or if you see the Kippas HaYishmaelim, if you see from a distance, you see the dome, you see the mosque, that's also called Roa Es HaMikdash B'Chabana. So that's what these poskim say, that not everyone agrees, but Moshe and Rav, and these other poskim held, that one would be required Mikvah Din to take Kriya B'Zman HaZeh. So this Din of Kriya is like other the emo, that has all the chumras of Kriya for other the emo. So one wants to follow this, should follow it appropriately. So Shatir Kriya, even Bizman Hazar. So there is a kula that a lot of people invoke, whether rightfully so or not, I'm not exactly sure. But there's a kula that's based on the following. The halacha is that, let's say I'm wearing a beggar that's not mine, it's a borrowed beggar. I'm not allowed to rip you off the beggar unless I get rishus from you. So if you don't give me rishus, I'm a goslin. I got enough to rip you a beggar. So, if you go see the kosel, so if you're wearing somebody else's shirt, so then you're not mechuz dekriya. So why should I bother wearing your shirt if it doesn't fit me? I'll wear my own shirt. I'll do mechiris chametz on the shirt, like mechiris of the business from earlier today. So I'll sell you my shirt. I'll do my kinyan chalipin on the shirt, and it's your shirt now, and I'm borrowing from you, and you don't give me rishus to dekriya on it. So technically speaking, that's right. Technically speaking, it's not my shirt. I'm not allowed to decree on it. But I don't know, you have to really, really think very hard about Rabbi Chanina's words, Kedai Obeis Elokeinu. Kedai Obeis Elokeinu L'Abed, one shirt, once in a while. So I think that, I think maybe it's the right thing to do to actually decree it. Not Mechub decree every time. Mechub decree, if you haven't seen the Makom HaMikdash L'Prachim, you haven't seen it once every 30 days. So the person's always, you're not going to take Kriya that often, but it doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael. So every time you go back, so Kedai Obeis Elokeinu to rip your shirt. You're not going to rip your best shirt. You could take an old shirt that you would throw out of tune anyway and rip that, I'm sure. Make the Baruch. We say Baruch Dayan Emes without Shem and Malchus. We say Baruch Dayan Emes, and there's a phrase we say, Eis Kosheinu, Sifateinu, Sheluch Bokseinu. So a few things Shulchan Aruch says that a person's wrong to say. I don't know, because I think the undershirt is probably not chayvin kriya. It's like other emails, so they mechuyif to roll your shirt. I don't know, I'm not sure. There's a lot of things going around with this kriya. I don't know. Lefiyani is dieti, again, I'm not saying this with Torah's Pesach. Lefiyani is dieti, I think that the correct thing to do is to, the first time you come to the Beis HaMikdash, every 30 days, whatever it is, take kriya and finish.
What is from a person that arrives in Eretz Yisrael on Wednesday, and Dafka does not go to Kotel until Shabbos or Yom Tov?
Yes, that's the Shabbos. So obviously on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you're not allowed to take kriya. So Rav Moshe Paskin, that, right, you don't take kriya on Shabbos, and Motzoi Shabbos, you take kriya on the shirt that you were wearing on Shabbos, even though you're back in Tel Aviv. So, that's a Moshe Chiddush. So, that means your Shabbos shirt you have to rip now. That was a Chiddush, Rav Moshe. Then there's a minig in Yerushalayim, not to tear on Friday afternoon, at the Chatzos, which is hard to understand. Rav Moshe writes, doesn't know where this minig came from. Not saying not to follow it, he says, just doesn't understand what it's based on. So there are some who say that it's based on the following. It's based on something we should have mentioned back earlier when we spoke about Avelis and Shabbos. I should have mentioned this, that there's a common misconception that a person is in the middle of sitting Shiva, so Friday afternoon they don't have to sit Shiva. That's absolutely not true. The Shiva quotes from all the Echmerim who say it's Amish, not true. That Shiva goes until right before Shabbos. Until you need a few minutes to get out of here, take off your kriya, to take off your, because you don't wear kriya on Shabbos, take off your shoes, to get put in your suit, to go to get ready to go to shul. It takes a half hour, whatever it takes to get ready for Shabbos. So be it. So then, those things are, that amount of time, you wouldn't be noyeg avelus. But short of that, so the rabbi is regular avelus on Friday afternoon. So where did this mistake in minute come from? So someone suggests that it came from Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, not any post can say there's no avelus in the afternoon of Erev Pesach, it's a shtickle yontif. It's a melacha, it's Pesach. So it could be that Erev Pesach is a shtickle man simcha, so it could be that there's no avelus in Erev Pesach. Some people mistakenly carry that over to Erev Shabbos. Be very careful when you're menachem over somebody. So if you want to be menachem over Friday afternoon, make sure that they're really sitting shiva. If the person doesn't know the din and they're up already at 12 o'clock walking around, it's going to be very embarrassing to be menachem over. But the person is no dalacha. They really should be sitting shiva till late in the afternoon on Friday. So I think Rabbi Shechta thought that this, that same mistake that people made on Erev Shabbos of Avelos, so that's why he thinks that this minute came from also, not the tear on Erev Shabbos, not the tear on Erev Pesach after Chatzayis. That makes sense. That's like a chalamoid. Could be that a chalamoid, maybe you don't tear Kriya. That's a, even that's not so partial. But that's a shot about regular Kriya and chalamoid. Our minig is that the Ramah calls the minig that for parents you do tear Kriya and chalamoid, and for other relatives maybe you shouldn't. But so nice, I think that minig is to tear for everybody in chalamoid. But to tear for the Machom HaMikdash, so maybe that's where the mistake came from. Not to tear on Friday afternoon, because somehow that's connected to Erev Pesach. It's a very, very difficult minhag to understand. Ramesh himself writes, he's not saying not to follow the minhag Ramesh, he just doesn't understand where in the world it came from. That's why I try to avoid the shayla. I try dafka not to go on Shabbos first. Or dafka not to go Friday afternoon first. Why do you get involved in it? The shayla should take, if you're not take Kriya, go on Thursday. You can go on Thursday, go Friday morning, with even for sure Mukhir to take Kriya, and take Kriya once and finish.
If you go on Shabbos, you make early Shabbos, so you want to be here Shabbos.
Yeah. Shabbos goes already. Post can talk about, let's say a guy's in the middle of Shiva, so if he's Makap Shabbos early, so Taka Shabbos starts early. That's a shadow that Post can talk about on Friday. At what point can you really take off your shoes? Can you put on your shoes? So some say maybe you should Taka go Friday afternoon to Mincha, you should go with your sneakers on. And then just out at Shiki, you should take him off. They call from Shlomo Zalman, and then once it's close enough to Shabbos already, so that's ready, the chef of Shabbos, that's already starting. So I don't know.
What about Taylor, if you can, like,
choose
that
Shabbos, right? You mean to avoid it? Yeah, but then you may be stuck on Rav Moshe Shalom, maybe there afterwards. So I don't know. Again, there are different opinions about this. There are different people have different practices. I think that it makes a roshim on a person. A person knows that Kedai will base of a Canaan, that we should still keep this in mind.
Left side or right side?
Left side, I like the prayer. What else do you
say?
Yeah, Zekri Rosh Chodesh, yeah, for sure. Rosh Chodesh, for sure, Zekri, yeah.
Okay, and if you mend a baguette after
you start here? The same as mending for a parent. It's not worth it. you're not going to still. Same shit. Yeah, the post is talking about being marchik, and then you have to separate if you had about three poles from one kriya to another kriya. By the time you finish being marchik, there's very little left of the shirt. So I don't know. Baruch Hashem, it's manazev. So many shirts. How often? I think it's just there. Yeah, it should be all shashigal aflibo. So again, you're not mechuv to the undershirt because that's hafakas to sell, and you're not mechuv to the titus because that's a beggar mitzvah. So it turns out to be the shirt. The bottom line is it ends up to the shirt. See it from far may also be a shiloh. Yeah.
Huh?
You can see the dome from far. That's the question. I always try when I come to Shalom, I always try to be careful not to see it. Usually the first place I go is to the castle. So try to be careful not to go to the 24th of Plaza. You can talk to see it. So you have to be careful where you go. Yeah, unless you've seen it all the time. If you go 30 days without seeing, so then you should tell. Okay. There are a few other assorted things which appear in the Chazavelos.
Which wall? You said the Kotel, what about the other wall? That southern wall,
the eastern wall, that they need to go. No, I think it's always assumed that the Kotel, that's the wall that's associated with Churban. I think that's what it says.
The thing we now see,
the Shabur never, no one knew they existed, no, till how long ago?
No, they're just part of the
I know, but okay, I don't know, maybe.
But one should try to avoid seeing the
Kibbutz Ishmael. No. If you see it, then you should tear. There are a few other sort of things which are related, not so much Avelus, but they appear in Shulchan Aruch and Avelus, and they're related more in terms of Kavura. So they're also not very joyful topics. So they're also included in the set, assume of what you're allowed to learn. The one topic that we're not going to really talk about today is the issue of Tumas Karnim. So Tumas Kohanim also appears in Uchas Avelis. So Tumas Kohanim is a little bit more, I think, a little bit more lumbus than that's more geschmack learning in the sense of maybe we'll shy away from that on Tisha B'Av. But in Yadam of Klur, I think, are also too cheery. So we'll talk just a little bit about these things. So the Torah tells us that you have to do a Klur, you have to bury a mace. So it's a shiloh, but it's the rice, the bottom of the mice that we passed from that, it's the rice. We spoke about this in the Kibra Avim, so you read about that Mechila and Kvura right earlier in the summer. So the mice is a mitzvah of a Kvura. The Kvura applies not only to the Haruge Beizin, it applies to any Jew as well. And the mitzvah of Kvura, the mitzvah of Halonis HaMeis, means you're supposed to be covered the mace as soon as possible, covered to Grenna Bayamahu, preferably on that day. And in addition, also Lin, if also late, you're not supposed to leave the mace over. So that's a big shine on the postgame. Does that mean over until the next morning? Does that mean even over until the night? In America, it doesn't make much of a difference because most of our Kororos, we can't bury at night anyway because the union rules they don't permit burials at night. But you have to throw it, do whatever you want. So then everybody knows they have kavuras in the kavuras all the time. In order to throw in the middle of the night to avoid the problems of halanas hamace. At Chila, once you try to bury Mamash on that day, if you can't bury that day, at least Chach during the night. If for whatever reason you can't bury it at night, at least that night you try it as soon as possible in order to bury the mace. the idea of Alanis HaMeis, so the Gemara tells us, Sanhedrin, that the only time you're allowed to delay a Kvura is if it's Lechavet HaMeis. And let's say to get Arim with Tachrichim, those kinds of things. So that's all right. You're allowed to delay a Kvura for those purposes. So let's say you want to delay a Kvura in order to have family members come. So you have very details in the postkim. You know, what point do we say that's considered to be covered and make? Sometimes it really is covered and make for the children to come. Sometimes the other family members, not necessarily the greatest covered and make. So again, you have to size up. If it's covered and make, if it's Kvura the covered and make, then it's mutter to be male and it's a make. If it's not a covenant mace, then it's a problem. There was a whole to-do, it was fascinating to Chachuva, and it was Simon about Kvura, that talked about there was a whole fight in Europe about there was a decree by the non-Jewish government that they weren't allowed to bury mason for 3 days. They had to wait to make sure the person was actually dead. Apparently what happened was, they in the middle of a funeral, so some guy got up, he was the mason, he woke up in the middle. So they were afraid that maybe they were burying people who were still alive, so they made a government decree that 3 days you have to wait before you can bury somebody. So the question was, how can we follow the decree of it? We know the person's dead already. There's no soft, no shayla. So what kind of, how can you follow this? So there was a whole tumult with the Chassidim as a tshuva, and then Rav Emden got involved. So everyone was getting involved with how to get around the whole HaMeis problem in terms of this. The Pashup Shad is that Halonis HaMeis doesn't apply to a non-Jewish mace, it applies to a Jewish mace. It's a Kvura only a Jewish mace. It's a Ramban, Ala Torah. The Ramban says that in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to leave even a non-Jewish mace around. Most of the time he said Moscha, the Torah says in Pashup Yisrael. So the Ramban learns that means that there's an Isser besides the regular Mitzvah Kvura and the regular Sivul Yolin. So in Eretz Yisrael, so even a Goyish mace would be also. So my state, Ramban is not quoted in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramban doesn't quote it. Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it. So the shadows were really passing like that. If you were really passing like that Ramban, you'd have a big problem with medical schools in Eretz Yisrael. Because all the medical schools in America, so Jewish doctors are assuming that the fact that they're being metop the mason and they're doing all kinds of things that would otherwise be not permitted to be done to Jewish mason. We're assuming that the mason is not a Jewish mace. So if you hold like this Ramban in Eretz Yisrael, even the Goyish mason are have to be buried in effect. That would throw into serious question the permissibility of working with mason in Eretz Yisrael. So I guess everyone is assuming not like this Ramban. It doesn't say it in Shulchan Aruch, so it's not necessarily accepted as halacha. It's interesting Ramban. Take a look at the Tisha B'Av. Take a look at Ramban and Pashas Kitzayitza. No, they usually get them from other places. Whatever, wherever they get them from, they get them. Rove in Ochidami. So if you see a name in the cadaver that looks like that looks says cone, so you got a problem. The Gemara Bava Kama says the Gemara Bava Kama says that ain't malinus a mace through Shalayim. You're not allowed to leave over a mace in Shalayim. Gemara says, what's the reason? So the Gemara says Gemara, the tradition. What gives us a reason? So there's a Zohar that gives a reason. I don't know what the Zohar says. Or Kivegas says, look in the Zohar, and it gives me the reason, whatever it is. So the Ma'is in Yerushalayim, there's a din of Alonis Ameis. So all the place can say, what do you mean Yerushalayim? There's an Isser of Alonis Ameis. There's an Isser of Alonis Ameis in New York also. So Ma'is Dan in Yerushalayim. So many places can say, the Chiddush is that even in those cases where you're allowed to do Alonis Ameis, such as the Chavar Ameis in Yerushalayim, it's a high level of Kiddush, you're not allowed to. So that's part of the reason why Yerushalayim, we all know, in Mizman Hazeh, they're very, very careful. They very, very rarely will hold up a Leviath, anything. So even though it probably doesn't apply to those public forests that are not really in part of real Yerushalayim, but Afal Bichein, that became the minute. They're very, very extra, especially careful, the Chavar Kiddush of Yerushalayim, not to get involved in any of these shilas whatsoever of Holanus Ameis. Even the Chvodo, they try to always rush things along. There are a whole series of different shilas about now what's required to do kavura on. Let's say the Gemara Ksuba talks about an Eva Minachai, the person loses a limb during their lifetime. The Gemara speaks about doing kavura. That's a shilah. Is that really a mitzvah kavura? Then that'd be the right. It's just it shouldn't be a listening Eva. You don't want to leave it around. Kohanim will become tamei with it because Eva Minachai is in the tamei. So that's a shilah. How much is a person sometimes has a limb removed, other things removed? How much you bechur to be meisa nefesh really to make sure that it gets the day kavura? That's a shilah. Moshe has the different shuvas about that. One shuva of Moshe writes that even Bosam and Achai, even a person, let's say, has an appendix taken out of something, they should try to get it buried. And in another tshuva, Moshe writes, no, only an Eva Minachai. I'm going to take a limb, an arm, a finger, something like that. It's just that Bosa Minachai, maybe not. If one's able to, it's able to. One's not able
to. An internal organ?
That would be the same thing, right? I mean, the person has a kidney
taken
out.
Maybe a finger?
No. An internal organ would be like a kid, would be like an appendix. It's just Bosa. It's not an Eva. It's not a Bosa getting me at some of then maybe one wouldn't be required to. Then you have also technical shilas in terms of how much of a maize has to be buried. Let's say just a small amount of a maize, so how much you have to try to be buried. So we of course know, we know Nebuchadnezzar, we know how much people are makbid on this to try to get every last drop to be able to bring it to Kavura. Not that came out Mechayim, no. I guess the wisdom tooth doesn't have to be comes out Yachamisa maybe. No, I forgot already. I don't remember, but it comes up Mechayim. In addition to the dinim of Kavuras Ameis, so there are other whole series of other dinim how to relate to Ameis. There's a general dinim of Kavod Ameis that Moshe Lacham instituted the dinim of Shmira for Ameis. You're not allowed to do procedures on Ameis and just stop. Just to do autopsies for no reason, so it's clearly out of the question. There was a big machlokes in the poskim about if doing a particular procedure on a mace, umamash ruach goach nefesh, I mean, the information that you find out now really saves somebody else's life right now, is that permissible? And even that, not everyone agreed to, so one dish of shayla about that. But if it's not what we call a real pikuach nefesh, then just stop to do it for other reasons is a very, very serious, problem in terms of nival hamais. There is a shayla that comes up fairly often, as we mentioned earlier today's year. Sometimes you have a situation, a person dies in a type of an accident or something, and they have to, sometimes there are certain standard government laws to ascertain. You want to make sure that the person didn't have alcohol in the system or drugs or whatever it is, even though the person was never the innocent person in the accident. So sometimes the law says that they have to do certain blood tests on the person after death. So the question is that how much you have to make a fuss over that, how much you have to really fight against that. So I had a tragic situation, but I learned this halacha from a very, very special individual. I mentioned earlier today there was an individual in my shul several years ago, previous shul, who was killed in a car. He was kind of hit by a car. He was walking, he was hit by a car. And apparently the law still is in New Jersey, that a pedestrian gets hit by a car, killed by a car. So you have to, they have to check his blood to make sure that he wasn't drunk, or he wasn't, the pedestrian, maybe. He wasn't paying attention, maybe he was on drugs, So the family, they told the family this, that they have to draw blood from the mace. The family's like, I got so upset, they draw blood from the mace, people are mace. So the person who was involved was, he's the chaplain for the Bergen County Police Department. Full figure, Chassidish fellow. He's a fellow from Muncie. He's a chaplain, and I was sitting with him, and he said to me at the time, I was sitting with one of the members of the family and him, and he said to me, "Don't worry, don't worry. Ramosh is not. So to tell you the truth, I didn't know what he was referring to at all, but it wasn't like I had time to look up an English Moshe then. I didn't remember soon. Okay, tell me Ramosh is not, and some, he's done, dealt with this before, so some he was right. So I told him, okay, I'll smach this particular rabbi, again, I didn't really know who this rabbi was, exactly, it was a Chassidish fellow. And then later on, so I found the tshuva of Ramosh. He said, all right, Ramosh was not there. What was the tshuva? Ramosh said that drawing blood is not an evil amaze. Why? Something that you normally do when you're alive, and nobody thinks twice about, but not an evil amaze. Evil amaze means cut off a limb, cut off an organ or something, take out the person's liver. That's an evil amaze. Again, I'm not talking about the transplants now. It's way beyond the topic right now. I'm talking about assuming that's not, other issues. So that anything that a person would be terribly embarrassed in his lifetime if they started cutting him open, so that's an evil amaze. They start cutting off his arm, that's an evil amaze. But a guy goes on a blood test every Shemini Chamishi. A guy goes to the doctor for a blood test. So Ramosha said to draw blood from a mace. What kind of evil mace? It's not an evil mace. I thought that tshuva, because Ramosha was mischadish to me in the more and the morgue of the Bergen County Police Department, whatever. That was mischadish for this particular individual. But Taka told me I'd never seen that tshuva in Ramosha before. There are other dinim in terms of the mace, in terms of the proper way to deal with the mace. The mace is also about knowing. You're not permitted to derive benefit from a mace. So this is a big machlekes about the discipline to a non-Jewish mace. Also, machlekes have shown him, but many people are makil. That's part of the whole discussion about becoming a doctor, studying anatomy, looking at the bodies. Is that called hanor? Is that not called hanor? The minig is lahakil. One of the svaros lahakil is based on this idea that it could be, if it's a non-Jewish mace, so maybe the issue doesn't apply bechlal to a non-Jewish mace. That's a shaila. But if it would be a Jewish mace, so clearly one should not be involved in these types of studying of a Jewish mace. It would be a nivula mace, it's a bit of a skvura, a little soul in the vessel age. It would be a Yisrael Hanor, it would be a lot of serious problems. So one would have to make sure, best of one's ability, to make sure that it's a non-Jewish mace. So
what if you're caring for a Jewish patient? Mm-hmm. I mean, or studying anatomy of a Jewish patient?
It's a dead body.
Yeah.
That's a problem. I think we're going to wrap it up soon. So we spent a lot of time, about to end in a minute. We'll end anyway. We spent so much time today involved in the Yadam of Avelus. So the Ramah ends up Hilchos Avelus that the most important, in a sense, the most important part of Hilchos Avelus, the halachas of Abba is important, but the Musa that Avelus is supposed to give a person, the Chai Yiten Alibai, that Avelus is supposed to remind us of our own mortality, it's supposed to remind us all that we're all boss of Adam, and exactly 2 months from today is Yom Kippur, to the day. Masanah Tekev is around the Miyachem Biyamos, is ultimately supposed to be one of the major themes of Avelus, of Chayitena Libay. So that's what the Rambam writes, the person isn't this Abel Karoi, but it's Mamashav Zoskis, it shows that the person is an insensitive type of person. The person isn't this Abel Karoi. The other end, Chazal say, if a person is this Abel too much, it shows that he doesn't believe in Chesem Eisem, it shows that he doesn't believe in Hashkach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it has to be, that's for the Torah and the Chachamim and the Halach is Keveya, Gimu Yom Lebechi and Shivus Yom Lechumim and Shloshim Legius and Yud Beis Chedesh and all the different Klalim, all the details of the Chazavelos, but to try to meet this perfect middle ground in the sense that we don't want to be oblivious to death, but on the other hand we don't want to focus on death all the time. You can't focus on death all the time. But the Gemara says in the beginning of Brachas that when a person feels they're about to do an Aveira, that the Yetzer is about to overcome them, so the Gemara says they should say Kriya Shema, they should learn Torah, and if none of that works, they should focus on death. So the Mefarshim asks, why don't they just start focusing on death at the beginning? Forget the Kriya Shema and the Torah. If it doesn't work, so go for the real McCoy. The answer is like the Havel's like in medicine. Sometimes a person has, you have a little infection, so you don't take the most heavy-duty dose of antibiotic right away. Sometimes if you can get away with a lesser dose, so be it. You don't want to go for the most drastic method. Why do you want to go for the most drastic method? Well, for a few reasons. First of all, we don't want everyone to walk around depressed. We don't want every every minute of the day, a person should be sitting, thinking about Yom HaMisa, a person sits and thinks about Yom HaMisa all the time. So it's going to be very difficult to Shivis Hashem, and Negdi Samit, Simcha, being Simcha Samit, it's going to be very hard to function properly. Also, a person who's constantly focusing on Yom HaMisa, so then he's going to lose it, it's like the antibiotic. Eventually you become, loses its oomph. We all know that. You take the same antibiotic enough times, so then the taka doesn't work anymore. So Yom HaMisa is something that's for the emergency method. It's the emergency Musa. We try to be Kavesh Ayeta through Limerat Torah, through Kriyashma, through other methods. Sometimes, if push comes to shove, if nothing else works, then you got to remember Chosaveilus. Each day of the year has its mitzvah Hayom, and just because there's a mitzvah Yom of a particular day of the year doesn't mean that the rest of the year you don't focus on that. It just means it's not the priority. Marshal Rosh Hashanah. It means the rest of the year you're not Kabbalah from Malchus Shemayim. No, it means that the rest of the year it's a Kriya Shemashachus V'Arvis, you're davening, benching, you think about it, Mishbarachu. Rosh Hashanah, it's almost the whole day. Malchus, 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 Kishayik and everything. Yom Kippur also. So every day we chayz the B'tshuva, hopefully, Sukkot. Every day we should have a Simchas HaMitzvahs. But there are certain days in the year where the primary theme becomes the focus. The same as in Tisha B'Av also. That we always remember Misa, we always remember the Gullus, we always remember the Churban, and the Chabam of Misakein, different things that we should always keep the Churban, in front of our eyes all the time. But we need one day of the year that should be Mamish the focal point. But not that it means to forget about it the rest of the year. It just means that the person sits and thinks about the Churban the whole day. He's not going to be able to sit and learn all day. He's not going to be able to daven. He's not going to be able to function all day. So it doesn't mean to forget about the Churban the rest of the year. It just means that you have to take the kochos from the Tisha B'Av, and that should be mashpia, that it should affect us. We should think about it. That we should spend time during the course of the year also focusing on these things. Perhaps not to the degree, we don't say kinnis the rest of the year, but that the Churban is something that we should come to appreciate its significance. That's something that that hopefully a day of Tisha B'Av, which was spent the way Chazal were conveyed, that Tisha B'Av is supposed to be, that the first half of the day is supposed to be the Chiyas, the first half of the day is not the time for the Shiurim, for the Chazavel Shiurim, the first half of the day is the time for the Kinnis, and the last night is the time for the Eicha, and the Misha Meisam of Tufanov, and then in the afternoon, the time of the Nachem, when we already start to see the Nechama, hopefully starting to come around, that's the time we get on our chairs and we're able to involve ourselves in Limud HaTorah, not Limud HaTorah in Simcha, not Limud HaTorah in the regular sense, but at least to some degree in Limud HaTorah. And hopefully, the schus of the proper observance of Tisha B'Av and keeping the Churban alive in our hearts and minds. So hopefully, as we said this morning, so we should be Zaycha, that Kol HaRoah, Kol HaMisabel, Yerushalayim, Zaycha, V'Roah, B'Simchasa, Yemiret Hashem. Next year, Tisha B'Av should be a yom of simcha and a yom to follow.